Changing any practice on the farm, no matter how well-intentioned or well-researched, comes with risk. But a new collaborative effort called Farmers for Soil Health is rolling out in 20 U.S. states to try to help take some of that risk off the table.
It's important that technical assistance is right along with the financial assistance to mitigate any risk to a farmer.
United Soybean Board Director of Sustainable Supply Jack Cornell joins us to kick off this brand new season of Soil Sense. This is the Soil Sense podcast, where we believe that building healthier soils is not just a prescription, but rather a pursuit. On this show, we unpack the ways farmers collaborate to build healthier soils and adapt systems to work on their farm for both sustainability and profitability. Let's get to the root of all that and cover some ground on today's episode of Soil Sense. Hey there, thanks for tuning in to Soil Sense. I'm one of your hosts, Tim Hamrich. Joining me, of course, is my co-host, Dr. Abby Wick, and we are both very excited to be sitting down today with Jack Cornell, Director of Sustainable Supply at the United Soybean Board. Jack has been leading a lot of the efforts for the Farmers for Soil Health program, which we're going to talk about at length in today's episode. But just before we do, to give you some brief background here, Farmers for Soil Health is a new collaboration in partnership with the Soy Checkoff, Pork Checkoff, and the National Corn Growers Association to create more of a farmer-led cover crop program that advances the use of soil health practices, meets sustainability goals, and improves farmer profitability. Farmers for Soil Health will engage farmers to proactively drive sustainability improvements while gaining critical support from industry and supply chain partners. One way they plan to accomplish this is by increasing the number of cover crop acres in the U.S. Today, cover crops are only used on about 6% of U.S. cropland, and their goal is to improve soil health by encouraging farmers to expand adoption of cover crops to 30 million acres by 2030. But of course, we know cover crops are just one tool in the toolbox. They're one potential component to an overall soil health system. And Jack is going to talk about the importance of that system and the importance that that system is a part of a farm business that needs to be profitable. Farmers for Soil Health is just one component of Jack's job, although it's a significant one, especially as of late. He explains his role as helping to create sustainability and profitability for farmers through project development, program management, and creating partnerships. He raised his hand when the position was created 2 years ago, and he's really committed to making sure programs like Farmers for Soil Health are farmer-centric, work with an overall farm business, and help make the sustainable thing the profitable thing. He starts our episode here with a little more insight into the Farmers for Soil Health program.
The three commodity groups, National Corn Growers, the Pork Checkoff, and the Soy Checkoff, got together and was like, we need to do something together in sustainability. Together we can be stronger. And so there was actually, you know, we were talking about lots of different things, but we signed an MOU alliance agreement that we were going to forge together in this path. And as we were kind of thinking through where we were going to go, the Partnership for Climate Smart Commodities came available, that grant opportunity. And we were like, well, let's forge our power together. Let's leverage this funding as, you know, we were always trying to identify opportunities for national organizations to help get funding back down to the farm level and using the state commodity groups as our vehicle to do that. And so this provided us that opportunity, the funding to provide some of these sustainability foundational steps to build in that infrastructure, to find a way to, you know, put more dollars in farmers' pockets at the ground level.
So I noticed there are 20 states that are part of this Farmers for Soil Health. And how did you guys pick those 20 states to engage in this project?
Lots of debate. So, I mean, obviously, you know, our checkoffs are way more than 20 states, but we had to make some cuts on some states, you know. And so ultimately we decided, since corn and soy were such big players within our group, that we wanted to focus on major corn and soy growing states. So we incorporate 85% of corn and soy grown in the United States. Now, with that said, Farmers for Soil Health, we do have ambitions to expand to other states, but it's going to require additional fundraising. So right now it's kind of like, I almost think that we're in this pilot phase, right? So we're in the pilot phase of getting this rolled out to all these 20 states. And then hopefully we have all the states. And so that's the idea. You know, it's pretty ambitious to have a 20 state pilot. But I think this could be really impactful, not just for those 20, but then in the future organizations. And, you know, I've been reaching out to other states that are outside, and there's opportunities that we kind of, you know, work to provide technical resources to those states. Things like this podcast, right? You know, this is obviously not going to be just aired in those 20 states. So there's going to be resources that are trickling down to those other states, and we will be working to get some of these market opportunities to those farmers as well.
Excellent. And can you talk about the goal that all these efforts are sort of rallying behind? What's the metric you're using for success here?
Yeah, so our ultimate goal is to help supply farmers with additional funding, right? To provide profitability through sustainability. But ultimately, you know, within any grant, you have to have a metric. And so the metric that we decided on was doubling cover crops by 2030. So going to 30 million acres. But, you know, our program is much more than just cover crops. So we have technical assistance for farmers, not just on cover crops, but any of their management needs that they have, right? So even adopting reduced tillage or no-till, also providing, you know, services such as communication aids to help them talk to other farmers or have those other technical assistance pieces.
So as being part of a farmer organization, it seems like you'd have a good grasp on like what it needs to look like going out to farmers and what this looks like to them. So how have you created that message going out to growers? Are you not at that phase yet? Or what do you think that's going to look like?
Yeah. So how we've kind of set up our program is essentially allowing the funding to be directed by the state commodity groups. So within the 20 states, we have subgrants that have been issued to different state commodity groups who said, I want these people to help service our farmers. So within each one of these states, they'll all have their own plan on how they're going to roll out, how they're going to communicate with farmers, you know, whether it's through the university extension. Some of them are working through like an ag tech center. Some are working directly just hiring people because they love the idea of having, you know, I'm from such and such commodity organization and I'm here to help you with your services. And we allowed that opportunity for them to kind of direct how they wanted to fund it, how they wanted to manage it, how they wanted to administer it. It was more challenging, I will say that, but it was much more rewarding to be able to have that buy-in from the state level to make sure that we were delivering the best product for the farmers.
And through that process, I'm curious about the barriers that you uncovered of why we're not further along in terms of cover crops. And I imagine just looking at the structure of this program, you've got, you know, financial incentives, technical support, and market access. I imagine those probably are answers to some of the barriers you uncovered. Is that right?
Yeah. So the biggest barrier of adoption is really kind of, you know, either the financial piece has been there, but the technical assistance hasn't been there, or the technical assistance is there, but not the financial piece. And so hopefully this is a great merger of those two resources to help farmers through that transition. You know, farmers have to introduce all the risk to when they have to implement a new strategy, right? Some people, when I talk to outside the farming community, you know, I always use the analogy. It's like going from a hamburger joint to a pizza joint, right? You got to get new ovens. You got to get new cooking equipment, new ingredients. It's a holistic approach, right? It's not just kind of one management piece. You have to incorporate a whole new different marketing and management style. You know, so it's important that technical assistance is right along with the financial assistance to mitigate any risk to a farmer.
And I want to zoom in a little bit on the financial incentives piece. Can you share more details about what is available there?
Yeah. So for acres that you're looking to do cover crops for the first time, we are looking at a 3-year descending payment of $25, $15, $10 per acre. If you have existing cover crop acres, it's $2 per acre. But we see that, you know, it's really just an incentive to help you get you through signing up for the sustainability marketplace. And it's hard for us to kind of come out and say how much exactly you're going to make because it's not really well established yet because we're still building it. But hopefully you're making another $20 per acre, right? You know, so that would be an ideal situation. But as coming from a commodity organization and not coming from a seed company or a capital type company, it's hard for me to kind of put ourselves out there and say, I guarantee you're going to make X amount of dollars, right? So we don't really sell that as much, but the opportunity is there, right? Then the other piece is definitely, hopefully, that gives you an opportunity not just for the cover crops, but also other management practices, right? So, you know, maybe you're not into cover crops, but maybe that sustainability marketplace, if you are into no-till or reduced till, there might be opportunities there as well to increase your profitability just through those management practices.
And is that marketplace specific to where a buyer would show up kind of on the marketplace and say, I'm looking for, you know, climate smart commodities that fit this criteria and willing to pay a premium for it for anyone who might fit?
Yeah. So ideally what we're doing is bringing in, you know, the CPG companies or whatever the end user buyer is of a commodity. They want to incentivize farmers to grow products sustainably for whatever corporate reason that they need or marketing need that they would have. And so what we've done is connecting them directly to the farmer, right? And so the marketplace will essentially, you know, they won't have names or who's associated with those fields, but you could actually see as a buyer of climate smart commodities, you can see kind of the different levels of management at a high level, right? Not getting too down in the weeds, but, you know, hey, I'm looking for no-till farmers that do cover crops. You know, how many bushels of soybeans or corn can I buy from those type of farmers? Hopefully, when we start refining it, you know, we'll be able to, I only want to buy from Tennessee farmers, right? And so there's an opportunity there where, you know, so say you have a new factory that gets built, right, in an area. And they're going to have this huge footprint, you know, whether it's water quality or the carbon emissions in that area. So they can just focus in on buying commodities from that watershed and just kind of having those opportunities directly to those farmers. And so having that connectivity is going to be pretty interesting to see how that all plays out.
And for a farmer that may be listening and saying like, okay, well, I'm already doing some cover crops, is there anything here that might be for me, or is this only for people who aren't doing cover crops?
Well, you're in the perfect place because, you know, if you're going to enter a sustainability marketplace, one of the issues is that, you know, a lot of these guys that are new to the space are probably going to be just kind of doing like 20 acres, you know, maybe just 100 acres because they got to figure out the management components of sustainability, right? So they have to figure out, okay, yeah, you're giving me additional incentives to expand my operation, but, you know, anytime you change your operation, you introduce risk, right? And so the farmers that are already doing these things, they've already figured out that risk. They've already been able to manage and be profitable. Now, on top of it, now there's just a marketplace where you can just be a player, right? And just be capitalizing on some of those management decisions that you've already sorted out, you know, a few years ago or a long time ago, right? You know, so I see this marketplace as a huge opportunity for them to really kind of expand their profitability and not have to, like, you know, try to also figure out how to do a new management system.
So I'm also curious, because we have an international audience for some of this, is this truly unique to the United States? Or do you think, are you seeing this in other locations, this type of approach?
Yeah. So, you know, talking to Undersecretary from the USDA, they are very interested in seeing this model of creating a sustainability marketplace to kind of being the ideal way to help farmers transition to more sustainability by increasing their market profitability, right? And so selling it this way, because the alternative is more regulations. So they're hoping and propping up this sustainability marketplace to hopefully help create a model that then can flow internationally, right? And providing some of those opportunities to the international farmers as well. So that's pretty exciting. If we can pull this off and kind of give a really great model to them, I think this could be something that, you know, definitely flows internationally.
So I don't know, Tim, if I can redirect into the personal side of things, but people working in this area, Jack, are very passionate, right, about sustainability or soil health. And so what drives you to take on all this complication and you know, process-oriented work to do this day to day?
Yeah, well, you know, I came from a rural community. My parents owned a small business. And at an early age, you see the direct correlation between when farmers are doing really well and my family's business was doing well. And so, you know, I kind of learned early the importance of kind of how important that the farmers are and the farmer community is to rural areas. you know, so that was always a big understanding for me. And then when I actually got to cut my teeth for the first time when I worked out in Hawaii in a breeding technology role, really working on farm. So we were working these old pineapple fields that had completely terrible soil structure, right? We always think about soils as like millions of years old. Well, in Hawaii, they were only like hundreds of years old. And so we had really bad issues with kind of our production. And so, you know, I started working with our operations crew and we started implementing cover crops and grass alleyways and terracing, and we doubled our production. I was like, oh my God, it's like light bulb type situation where you're like, we got to be doing this everywhere, right? You know, you have that fire in you. All of a sudden you're like, man, we got to do this, you know? And so over the course of my career, you know, I've always been implementing, you know, increasing production and increasing sustainability on farm, because it's something that you have that passion for and you can really see, you know, the benefits of it over time, as long as you can kind of get through some of those initial hurdles, you know, and problem solving. I love problem solving with a farmer. It's always a fun mental exercise. And when I walk on a farm, I never say, you know, you need to be doing cover crops and no-till. I go, you know, what is the thing that drives you insane that you just can't handle, right? And then I think through a sustainability approach to help them solve that issue.
So I see that we're going to interview some USB farmers that have been engaged there. And how important has that been for USB to have farmers doing soil health practices engaged in your organization?
So United Soybean Board, we have 78 board members, you know, so we have a project that comes up every year where funding for Farmers for Soil Health, and it has been approved every year because they also see the need to have some additional funds coming into this program to really help deliver sustainability at the farm level. You know, they're helping also with our oversight within our program, right? So we have a farmer advisory board. It's a great sounding board for our program. Like, hey, we have to make a decision here. Can you guys help us make a decision? And so they're able to provide that insight to us, and they're able to review any of our program issues. You know, so that's one of the things that I'm really excited about for this program, is that our program is farmer led, farmer driven, right? Some of the other programs, they're seeking to, you know, work on carbon sequestration. They're working on increasing shareholders' value of their company, right? Ours is solely centric on providing additional profitability to the farmers, and the farmers are the ones that are guiding it. I'm not here trying to make it my own program, right? I'm trying to make it the best for the farmers that I can.
It's a significant point. I mean, the fact that you all are accountable to farmers for this, not trying to position, you know, the narrative in some way. You're really just trying to get results for the farmers that you're accountable to. I think that makes a lot of sense. And the fact that you are really, it seems like every element of this program is designed to empower them to find what works best for them, which really kind of speaks to the heart of what we try to cover in this show.
We were very kind of like, well, you know, I don't know, as farmers sign up for things. I mean, Abby's very well of this, is like, sometimes it takes a lot of work to get farmers engaged in some of these new programs. But the risk factor for us is that the funding is coming directly from a grant. We're not trying to raise money on the backside or getting it from leveraging it from a company. It is sitting in the U.S. grant, and that money is going directly to you as a farmer. And so it's kind of a guaranteed amount, right? So it's not like somebody is going out and saying, you know, well, I signed up for whatever program and I'm supposed to get this amount of money, but I haven't really seen it. Well, our money is sitting in a grant. All you got to do is, if the paperwork is right, it's going right to you. It's not that complex. So it's very simple for a farmer to get some of that funding. And talking through it is that, knowing that the farmer organizations are the ones overseeing it, it kind of gives them a little bit of reassurance, like, okay, I'm not going to get totally screwed here where, you know, someone's going to come back and say, well, you didn't get your soil carbon numbers high enough, right? Like, that's not something our program is even interested in. We're looking at practice-based approaches to this. And so I think that's going to be huge. And it gives them a little bit more confidence to try it, right? And if they try it, then hopefully they'll find other opportunities. And what I also say is, like, if you're seeking the top dollar, if you're going out there, you want the top dollar, our program's probably not right for you. But if you are looking for a program that has the less risk to your operation, our program's probably the best one.
So how are some of these different state-based commodities getting farmers in the door to sign up for these programs and to build that networking opportunity for them?
Yeah, so we have opportunities like this podcast to get them to understand kind of what they're, what is out there for them. We have a lot of communications on the docket for kind of a state outreach for all these different farmers directed by the state commodity groups or the associations that we're working within that state commodity group. And then also we have a rollout of, you know, national organizations such as the Soil Health Institute or the CRA, Rob Myers Group and University of Missouri, to help with some of the national campaigns. Obviously, the national commodity groups will be educating farmers about it. So there's going to be a lot of information coming out. And so there's going to be a lot of resources there. And hopefully we're at events, you know, we'll be at a lot of farmer events to kind of talk about it as well. So anytime you're at an event and you want to learn more, I'm sure there's somebody there going to be willing to talk to you about it.
Well, I've certainly been encouraged by the few interviews we've already done so far for this season, for this series. And I think there are a lot of examples like that where you can actually see the difference. So I'm excited to kind of roll out these stories as part of this overall effort. For people listening, I just want to kind of keep coming back to the call to action. You know, what can we have them do? We will list the 20 states in the show notes so that you can see, you know, instantly right now if you're part of the 20 state quote unquote pilot, you know, that's here. Then just send them the website, Jack, or are there other kind of calls to action for others that might want to see if they can get some of those positive results?
Yeah, so farmersforsoilhealth.com. We'll be updating the website here shortly, and it will be ideally set up to give you all the resources you need. We are also looking to roll out the DTN platform. They're going to be the ones facilitating the kind of the technical work behind the platform. So we hope to have that going by the first 2 weeks of August. We'll be out there. So I encourage people to check it out. Once again, you could, you know, sign up for one field and see if you like it, right? You don't have to do all your whole operation. So, you know, but obviously reach out to any of your state commodity groups to talk about it. Even if your state is not in there, talk to your state commodity group and tell them we want to be in there. You know, so if we have enough push from other states, I think we can find avenues to help them and provide those resources to them.
And what about kind of making this last beyond just the grant? I know the grant's for a specific period of time. You know, how are you thinking about ways to set this up so that it can outlive, you know, just the current grant funding?
Yeah, so that's a really great point. And we haven't talked long term. I have my own vision, but we haven't started down the road yet as we're still trying to set it up. But I foresee the sustainability platform standing on its own without any grant funding, because there'll be such interest from farmers, there'll be such interest from corporate organizations that, you know, there'll be people signing in and they'll be kind of increasing their profitability through sustainability, just through practices without any cost share dollars. And the money will be there, right? And so the farmers are getting enough incentive from the sustainability practices that they're doing on their farm and selling those commodities at that. But, you know, I also foresee our MOU Ag Alliance with not just R3, but I could see it expanding within different commodities, right? So maybe sorghum gets on, maybe dairy gets on, right? So all these other organizations start getting in, and then we start kind of figuring out how to sell dairy products that are in a sustainability consortium, right? So, you know, how do we kind of incorporate all these other products? You know, and then there's also the opportunities for additional grant funding, right? You know, it's kind of like we created a really cool vehicle because now we can be at this national organization that goes after these large dollar amount federal grants and then help distribute that funding back to farmers and to the state organizations. Because some states are bigger than others, right? And their capabilities. And so it's really cool that we can help those state organizations, state commodity groups, to have the funding to be able to provide all the resources that they would like to around technical assistance. And so this is a unique opportunity for really to help our state commodities as well.
Yeah. Anything else on your end, though, Jack, that you'd like to share or emphasize before we let you go?
Yeah, just, you know, I'm really excited that we're able to provide a resource for farmers to really kind of have the financial assistance, the technical assistance to really help them evolve their operation. You know, maybe it's something that the farmer has always wanted to do, but he hasn't been able to, you know, get over that risk hurdle, right? They finally have the support hopefully to make some changes on their farm to increase sustainability, which I believe will help with soil resiliency within different climate things that could happen on a farm, right? You know, drier conditions, wetter conditions, and provide that resiliency in the soil to really help make sure that they're always profitable, right? You know, and I think it's important that a farmer always has something to harvest in the fall, right? I mean, that's how they make their money. And I think it's important that we provide the resources to help them make sure that there's always something in the field in the fall to harvest so that they can, you know, provide their for their communities and for their families.
What a great place to end today's episode. Thank you so much to Jack Cornell for being on the show. Some takeaways for me, this is a really ambitious undertaking in 20 states that really acknowledges that practices like cover crops are part of an overall system that's part of an overall business. On the fact that they're attacking it on multiple fronts like financial incentives and technical support and market development to me is really encouraging. Plus, I love the boldness of putting out an ambitious goal with a real metric, 30 million acres of cover crops by 2030. But of course, I'm excited that this podcast gets to play a small role of sharing some of the stories of how all of these approaches to soil health are working on the farm. So stay tuned for that first story on our very next episode. For more information on Farmers for Soil Health, just visit the website farmersforsoilhealth.com. I'll leave a link for that in the show notes as well. I want to thank the Soy Checkoff for sponsoring this Farmers for Soil Health series on the Soil Sense podcast. This show was produced by Dr. Abby Wick, Dr. Olivia Cayouette, and myself, with support from the United Soybean Board, the University of Missouri Center for Regenerative Agriculture, and the Soil Health Institute. If you're at all interested in what soil health looks like in practice and on the farm, I highly suggest you subscribe and follow this show on your favorite podcast app. And while you're there, leave us a rating and review. Until next time, stay curious, keep collaborating, and don't forget to take a minute to stop and smell the soil. Have a good one.